Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Jolly. It must be Wednesday, so it must be PMQ's Unpacked. It's the last one before MPs break up for the summer recess. A slightly strange one this week. Boris Johnson appearing via video link from Chequers, where he's still self-isolating, and Tory MPs told to stay away from the Commons Chamber, despite lots of them being very keen to turn up and take their place on the green benches now that some social distancing rules have been relaxed in Parliament. Find out what happened at PMQs when Patrick McGuire and I pause the action. That's coming up as our big thing. First, as ever, our columnist panel. It's Wednesday, so it must be Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson. Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson there. Of course, you can read them both in the Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next is PMQs Unpacked.
Right, let's talk about billionaires. And that we used to hope that our billionaire colleagues might do some good with their money, and instead they're taking themselves and their other billionaire mates to space. Is the philanthropist dead, Robert?
Well, to be fair to Bezos, I was just looking it up. He has given quite a lot away. I mean, he's got a lot to give away. $10 billion to climate change, $100 billion, which I don't quite believe, to food banks. I'm always a bit suspicious of philanthropy anyway. I kind of think he should pay his taxes. Amazon are fairly lax about doing that. And then after that, he can start being generous. In terms of going to space, I know we're all supposed to be terribly excited about space exploration and tourism. It's always left me a little bit unmoved, which is a terribly kind of Luddite thing to say. I know that everyone always says we got frying pans, you know, Teflon out of the Apollo thing.
I mean, if you're not excited by space, you're unlikely to be excited by a frying pan, Robert.
Exactly. I always think that, you know, maybe we should do more in terms of oceans and deserts and mountains here on Earth, in terms of making them possibly habitable rather than mucking around in space. Is it an ego thing? Of course it's an ego thing. Yeah, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but yes, yeah, of course it's about their ego. A billionaire, you know.
But I suppose the difference is that when it was nations, when it was Russia or America or whatever, investing in, there was some, you know, although it costs a lot of money and it's partly to do with showing off on the world stage, you know, any good that came out of it was then fed back into the sort of the greater public good rather than just taking rich people to space. What do you think, Alice, about the state of philanthropy? Instead of, you know, we should be applauding billionaires for giving their money to good causes, not for taking each other to space.
I wrote last week about Richard Branson, so I just love the fact that he spent all this money going up into space, and he's the world's biggest self-publicist. And actually what happened in the end is that no one noticed because of the cut. They were just obsessed by football and sort of, you know, bringing it home. And so poor Branson was left kind of totally alone, floating around in space saying, look at me, look at me. So that was quite entertaining, I thought. But actually, if you look at it, the amount that people that we spend on going into space and the amount of energy it consumes is so much more than anything else that it's not really worth it for the green issues. It's not really worth it for the planet. It's only worth it if you want to show off. And I just think for a few people to show off, what's the point?
And what about, I mean, it's an interesting point you make, Robert, actually, about, you know, if these very wealthy people just paid their taxes. There was a particularly gruesome moment yesterday when Jeff Bezos was, he thanked Amazon customers and staff because they'd paid for this. And actually, you know, everyone had paid for it by the fact that they haven't paid their taxes.
Yeah, although the Amazon staff in their warehouses on their minimum wage have probably paid for it a bit more heavily. I mean, I think it's, I mean, he can do what he wants with his money, but he needs to be his net wealth rather than his gross wealth. If you know what I mean? In terms of they should sort out their tax arrangements first, and then after that he can. I mean, I prefer if he gave to more prosaic causes. That if he wants to spend on going to space, that's up to him. That's up to him. I think. But like Alice says, I think basically it is showing off, and I think. There's lots of, as I say, I think there's probably lots of dramatic, explorey type things still to be done here on Earth, rather than going out into this great void, which is why it's never really excited me, because it's just, you know, they say, oh, there's a bit of light, you know, this planet's capable of sustaining life, and it turns out to be some sort of bit of slime.
Yeah, and I suppose actually, you know, given the climate crisis and all that, was fine. You know, spend your money. You can do something exciting. Go to the bottom of the sea or the top of a mountain, and you might help solve some of our problems. Yeah.
You just have to look at the shape of them, don't you? I mean, if you look at the shape of the rockets, you know exactly why they're doing it, and then it is, you know, thrusting forwards and going up. And no, the men don't mention it, but they're not many women doing it. I did once interview Sherman, who was the first woman, and actually the first British person into space, and she was so... unassuming and kind, relaxed, had made no money out of it, went round basically just asking children to go into science for the greater good. And she couldn't have been more different. Whereas this is definitely boys' toys. And, you know, when they talk all about how they want to create these new, you know, fantastic Mars stations and, you know, populate the moon, that it is just, you know, it's just men, really.
I mean, I was quite surprised when I saw people tweeting yesterday about the slightly phallic nature of the Bezos. Well, it can't be that bad. And then when I saw it...
No, it's appalling.
I mean, come on. And what about, in contrast to that, on the, you know, over here, separately, we've had Marcus Rashford. I don't actually think the story's dropped from the Spectator, but he tweeted yesterday saying, just heard Spectator plan to run a story on me tomorrow about how I've benefited commercially in the last 18 months. To clarify, I don't need to partner with brands. I partner because I want to progress the work I do off the pitch. And most of any fee I would receive contributes to that. And then he goes on to talk about how he helped 1.3 million children get access to food support through his relationship with Burberry. Children have a safe place to be after school, whether they'll be fed, and so on and so on. Is that the sort of right approach? Is that a better approach for sort of well-off people, do you think, Alice?
Yeah, I mean, my problem is I think you look at some of the billionaires, and more of them in America are doing stuff, but in Britain, very few are. So the people who give most in Britain are the people who are least well-off. They are incredibly charitable, just worldwide as well, that... our least well-off people are streets ahead of anyone else, whereas our billionaires do very, very little in Britain. And actually, Marcus Rashford and the footballers, who were slated at the beginning of this pandemic for being paid a fortune and doing very little, have been some of the few that have actually stepped up. So for the Spectator to say anything, I think is mad. I mean, it's insane for them to go after the people who are trying to do something, particularly when they're that young and are focused on trying to win at the same time and trying to, you know, help. Whether there's so many more people they could be going for who they know well and who are quite close to them, who are really giving nothing away at all.
Yeah, and also, it's just the mindset. Well, who should we write about this week? I know. Let's try and do in Marcus Rashford.
The Spectator, if you remember, has always been a bit tone deaf about football. When Boris Johnson was editing it, they managed to get the number of Hillsborough casualties wrong. And at that point, you just think, well, I got to be just tone deaf about.
He ended up having to go to Liverpool, didn't he?
To apologise because of things he said about kind of whinging Scousers. But what struck me about that was just that simple fact of getting the number of deaths wrong.
Yeah.
Which is just insulting and shows that well, you know, it could have been 50, could have been 96. Kind of, who cares?
It's only football. Anyway. I think the Spectator have learned their lesson. I just had a look on their website. I can't find the story, funnily enough. Alice, let's talk about your column instead. And it's a it's a lovely, slightly depressing column about the need for touch, the thing that everyone's been missing in the past 18 months.
So touch is incredibly important in a way we didn't realise, because you don't think of it. When you think of it, what you don't want to lose is your sight or your hearing or your smell or your taste. And actually, I lost my smell for 10 months and it didn't really bother me, whereas actually the thing that makes most difference, and the scientists think makes most difference now, is the sense of touch, and that all our skin receptors are very, very sensitive to touch, much more so and much more original than our sense of sight or taste or smell, which is very similar to everyone else's. And what I was saying really is that in the last 18 months we haven't been able to touch people very much. If you've been in a care home, you haven't touched anyone at all that you loved or cared for, really. You've had your carers, but that's a very different sense of touch. And that you haven't been able to kind of mingle or meet or really be together. And now, finally, after Freedom Day, we're allowed to. But I think people are too nervous to again already, that they're feeling too worried about the new variant. They're too worried about getting pinged. So just when you think you can throw your arms around people, is the moment when actually we're now becoming really reserved and nervous and kind of English again about the whole thing, or British.
And, but I think that also you're right, that even though now you are allowed to do this stuff, everything is, it's all a bit awkward and stilted. And so friends that you might see, or family, instead of it just being an entirely natural thing to give them a hug or a kiss or whatever it might be, it's all a bit awkward and all, you don't want to be doing it and you don't want to cause any offence, which just makes it like the opposite of a natural niceness. What do you think, Robert?
I mean, I was struck by Alice's column. I didn't realise that it was that the science, I mean, obviously I realised it was emotionally important, but I didn't realise it was so kind of the science backed that up. I mean, that was that you quoted that guy, I think, from, was it Liverpool University, who said it's for young people especially, it's as important as the air that they breathe. And that made me, just made me think that we're only just beginning to kind of imagine the long-term consequences of what's happened now that we're coming out of it. It's, or sort of coming out of it. It's all the complexity of it and the nuances involved and the potential damage that it's done over and above what we know about is really... it's going to play out for decades, isn't it? Especially, it's, you know, youngsters, we think about education, but it may be even more profound than that. If it's so important to development in your teens and so on, social interaction and particularly touch, then we're going to be living with the consequences of this for so long. It was, as ever, Alice, it was another fascinating column. Brilliant. I mean, great stuff.
And it also made me think of those images of people at funerals, you know, when they could go to, but like, you six people dotted around a room, like the one time you really want to be able to put your arm around someone or take them by the hand, in the worst possible
moment. I wrote about this a few months ago. Yeah. Sorry, my uncle
yes,
died.
Yes.
And it was just the most natural thing in the world would have been to give my cousin a hug, you know, his dad, my uncle. And as I died, and I couldn't, and so I suppose that was what was really missing, because we could speak to each other, we could see each other, but we couldn't touch each other, and that's what kind of really hurt. Sorry, Alice.
That's the difficult thing, I think, is that, I mean, I felt very much that I didn't mind about the smell, but I really minded for my mother, who spent 9 months in a care home without anyone touching her, and then when she died really, because I think she just gave up, but when she died, none of us were there to hold her or touch her. And that really felt difficult, actually. It felt really hard that we couldn't see her until she was dead and that she never had that interaction. I think we forget that all those people who died in hospital, they're not just statistics about dying. And it's not just that it was appalling that they were dying. It was just a horrendous way to die. And medical friends of mine, the doctors and the nurses, said they were having to stand in and try and hug people through their PPE because they felt it was just so inhumane to die without anyone there with you, holding you. And I think that's, you know, now it seems like a luxury to be able to die in that way, but it really should be sort of normality for everyone that you have someone there to be with you, to hold you as you go from one world into the next, or however you feel, whether you have faith or not. I mean, I don't, but I do definitely, I would want someone with me if I was, you know, that was happening to me. And I think that's just a really, really tough call. And it's very difficult for anyone in a hospital, anyone in a care home to try and step in. And
that's kind of that's kind of what I meant about the long-term consequences, because, I mean, bereavement's bad enough anyway. But we need to be thinking about setting up some sort of mass bereavement counselling, I think, because this is really traumatic for, I mean, what is it, 120,000 people have died? I mean, they say they all know, they're all very, you know, intimate with 10 people. That's over a million people are going to be suffering from, and we ignore that at our peril, you know?
And I suppose
it's a form of kind of PTSD, isn't it?
And the thing that, reason it feels so difficult is because what we now know about COVID is that it's about the air. And so all the touch and the wet wipes and disinfecting and all that actually wasn't the thing that, you know, was the key. And so maybe not only has it been very difficult for people who haven't been able to touch, but maybe actually they could have done and it wouldn't have been as risky. Well, it's lovely to speak to you as ever, albeit on a slightly downbeat note, but it's a cracking column.
Robert Clampton and Alice Thompson there, of course, you can read them both in the Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to the Redbox Podcast. Now it's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley.
And Patrick Maguire. He's back. Everyone's favourite political impressionist. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very, very hot. Now I've got a newfound respect for James Corden. I mean, listeners who don't tune into the video feed will not know that I'm a larger gentleman. And how James Corden does this in LA every day, I don't know.
You've got a jacket on, that's the thing.
Well, my shirt is so wet now, I can't take it off. But now, my jacket is also... Anyway, nobody needs to know this. It's just awful.
It's just very hot. I made the same mistake because I'm going to a do later on. I thought, I'll wear a jacket, look a bit smart. It's insane. Who's invented jackets? Right, so it's the last PMQs of the session. It's the 60th, they're marking the fact it's the 60th anniversary of PMQs, which obviously we know because we did PMQs Unpacked episode one on Friday. Is this episode going to live up to some of the great PMQs of our time?
Well, in another world where COVID cases were through the floor, this might have been the return to a packed house. Keir Starmer's first time in front of mass ranks of Labour MPs, cheering him on, a full government bench as well. But Labour whips early in the week told their MPs, keep your masks on, stay social distance. And in this morning's Times, my friend of yours, Henry Zeffman, chief political correspondent, has a story. Tory MPs for all... of the government's rhetoric on Freedom Day have been told to do the same thing. So as well as the Prime Minister being at Chequers, it's going to be another instalment, hopefully the last instalment in the rather subdued pandemic chronicles, I think.
And Keir Starmer started the week over the weekend on Monday really sort of actually going in studs up on Boris Johnson on Freedom Day and saying it was a mistake and, you know, saying we should always still wearing masks and that sort of thing. Who do you think is ending? I suppose we'll ask this question again at the end of PMQs. But who's ending the term in a better place?
I think Keir Starmer has hit his stride, found a rhythm that works for him, that minimises the Prime Minister's ability to evade questions, although, God, he's trying, and that that is making the most of the great many unedifying, unfavourable news stories that crop up in the government's inbox in any given morning, let alone day. So it'll be interesting to see whether, one, Keir Starmer references the Dominic Cummings revelations from last night and the night before, and also the Violence Against Women proposals that came out this morning. Might be a bit soon, you might think. Keir Starmer tends to plan these things like any good lawyer a long time in advance, but Labour thinks crime is the issue that's going to decide next election. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot for him to go at. He could do crime and violence against women, which he's done before. A couple of weeks ago, he did sort of the terrible rape conviction rates. Dominic Cummings, he could do. He could do the stories on the front and some of the papers, migrant crossings and, you know, Priti Patel making up some other...
Or the pingdemic.
And just about anything else. Well, let's find out then. Let's go live to the House of Commons. This is Keir Starmer.
Position, Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I also thank you and all of the House of Commons staff for everything you've done to keep Parliament open and safe? Can I wish the Prime Minister that the Chequers won well in his isolation? With 500,000 people self-isolating, I think we're all a bit surprised that the Prime Minister, the Chancellor and the Cabinet Office Minister were all randomly chosen for a get-out-of-isolation-free card. But it's good that the Prime Minister finally recused himself, even if it took a public outcry, for the Communities Secretary to be humiliated on live TV.
Boris Johnson
and a trip
looking very
to a country
unimpressed,
estate.
It has to be said.
Mr. Speaker, if someone is pinged by the NHS app, as millions will be over coming weeks, should they isolate? Yes or no?
Mr. Speaker, is the answer to that. And I think that everybody understands the inconvenience of being pinged, as he rightly says. Here I am. I wish I was with you in the Commons chamber today. I apologise to everybody in business up and down the land in all kinds of services, public sector or otherwise, who are experiencing inconvenience. We will be switching, as the House knows, to a system based on contact testing rather than contact isolation. But until then, Mr. Speaker, I must remind everybody that isolation is a vital tool of our defence against the disease. You're five times more likely to catch it if you've been in contact with someone that gets it and someone that has it. And, of course, even if you have been vaccinated, you can still pass it on, though that risk is reduced. And the overwhelming arguments, Mr. Speaker, are for getting a jab. Everybody should get a jab.
Keir Starmer.
Well, let's just jump in there. I think, slightly owing to the fact, I don't know if the Prime Minister unmute himself in time, but I think his actual answer to the question, should you isolate? I think it was yes, but we didn't quite hear him.
And it was concealed in a mass of extraneous material that, you know, as with so much of what ministers are saying this week, exists to make us believe that, you know, we're enjoying our freedom. It's an interesting question, and it's one that ministers have, as you know, on your show yesterday, you had three Tory MPs all giving a different answer. Victoria Atkins this morning on Times Radio gave the exact opposite answer that Paul Scully, the man who started all of this yesterday, gave. And now the Prime Minister has done his best to look like he's not answering the question at all. And then obviously on the front page of the Telegraph this morning, you see other cabinet ministers are saying, well, let's extend the list of industries that are exempt. So clearly, the actual answer to the question, the one Victoria Atkins gave in a very straightforward way to Stig and Asper this morning, is one the Prime Minister feels very, very uncomfortable answering.
And maybe based on that answer, he's probably quite glad there aren't more Tory MPs in the House of Commons. Well, let's go back to question two from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister says that everyone understands the government's position as to what you should do if you're pinged by the NHS app. That's a very interesting answer, because the government's all over the place on this. Yesterday, his business minister said the app was an advisory tool only. Another government minister, and I kid you not, said yesterday the app is just to allow you to make informed decisions. What on earth does that mean? Allow you to make informed decisions. And of course, the Prime Minister and the Chancellor spent the weekend trying to dodge isolation altogether. So, Mr. Speaker, the British people are trying to follow the rules. How can they, when his ministers keep making them up as they go along?
No, Mr. Speaker. If I may laboriously repeat the answer that I gave earlier on to the Right Honourable Gentleman, so just to get it into his head yet again, isolation is a very important part of our armoury against COVID. We're going forward, as everybody knows, to a new system on August the 16th based on testing. But in the meantime, when you're advised to isolate, to protect others and to protect your family against the spread of the disease, then you should do so. And of course, even more important than the isolation campaign is, of course, the vaccination campaign. 3 million people of the 18 to 30 group still to get one. I think the Right Honourable Gentleman's time would be more usefully employed, if I may say so, encouraging everybody to get vaccinated.
Keir Starmer.
He's doing his best to avoid the language of compulsion there, despite saying people should self-isolate. It was all, you know, vital tool among many in armoury. When you are advised to self-isolate, there's no suggestion that people absolutely have to. And for that, that's the reason Keir Starmer's line will cut through, I think, because there is a sense that there are no rules. And if the Prime Minister himself can't say in a straightforward way, yes, then it's no wonder this mood of chaos is.
And what's really noticeable, having been at various times quite critical of Keir Starmer for being slightly off the mark, he's sort of capturing the public mood. If you listen to the focus group that we did on Monday night, played it out on Tuesday with a panel of swing voters, they were basically laughing about the mess on Sunday over who should self-isolate and who shouldn't. It was all very confusing. And essentially giving, you know, we had six, seven, eight people on a focus group Zoom call. All of them almost admitted at various points breaking the rules. They had a rule for them. Well, I have got the app, but I turn it off when I leave the house, which is one of my favourite explanations. But that gives people licence to think that there are rules that we're, you know, everyone is allowed to do their own thing. And what Keir Starmer is doing is just sort of tapping, you know, rather than sort of drilling down into details and asking questions for which there are, you know, opportunities for Boris Johnson to get bogged down in the detail by asking sort of broad brush questions. This is a mess, isn't it? And then Boris Johnson burbles on so much, it sort of illustrates the point.
Yes, exactly. And when you think of iconic P&Q's exchanges, I'm not for a moment suggesting we're crawling towards that sort of status for this quite ordinary exchange. The questions, you know, you don't think of Blair asking Major for, figures on the ERM or precise prison numbers. It's all about capturing a sense, a mood, a moment. And I think Keir Starmer is successfully doing that here.
Yeah, yeah. All of the examples that we used last week, you know, I lead my party, he follows his week. All of those are, yeah, great sort of moments which sum up the public mood rather than, yeah, getting down to the nitty-gritty. Right, let's go back. Question number three, Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, everything may be calm from the Prime Minister's country retreat, but back here, the truth is, we're heading for a summer of chaos. There's a lot of noise, Mr. Speaker. I hope they've all got their NHS app on. Mr. Speaker, we're heading for a summer of chaos. 1 million children were out of school last week. 1 million, and a huge number of businesses are closing because so many staff are self-isolating. So let me turn to the question of exemptions. Yesterday, the messages coming out of Number 10 about which businesses and workers might be exempt from isolation changed hour by hour. First, yesterday, there was going to be a list, and then there wasn't. And then the Prime Minister's spokesperson said this, and I quote, "We are not seeking to draw lines specifically around who is or who is not exempt." Now, I've read that, and I've reread it several times, Mr. Speaker. I haven't a clue what that means. The Road Haulage Association hit the nail on the head when they said this, and I quote, that it was thought up on the hoof without proper organisation or thought. Now, Mr. Speaker, I know the Prime Minister likes to govern by three-word slogans. I think Mr. Speaker, I think on the hoof might work pretty well. So, last chance before recess, for millions of workers this matters.
Order. Mr. Gullis, I don't need any help or assistance from yourself. The next time you point to your watch, might be better looking at Big Ben outside rather than here. Come on.
That's Tory MP Jonathan Gullis getting a ticking off there.
Recess, can the Prime Minister just clear it up? Which workers and which businesses will be exempt from isolating before the 16th of August?
It's your own time you're wasting.
Mr. Speaker, I think this is really pretty feeble stuff from the Right Honourable Gentleman. This what's going to be a glorious 60th anniversary edition of PMQs. I've given him the answer in a letter that he had earlier on about the businesses and the sectors of industry that we think that it would be sensible now to exempt. But he can't have it both ways, Mr. Speaker. He attacks the self-isolation system. But as far as I understand the position of the Right Honourable Gentleman when it comes to the roadmap, he actually now this week opposes going forward with step four as we did on Monday. He wants to keep this country, as far as I understand his position, in lockdown. And now which is it? He can't have it both ways. He can't simultaneously, Mr. Speaker, attack
the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, just a moment. We're really struggling on the sound level. I don't know whether we can actually have the sound level turned up to hear the Prime Minister.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Prime Minister. Otherwise, you've got a great stand-in who's quite desperate. But I want to hear this, Prime Minister.
That's Jacob Rees-Mogg is sitting on the front bench.
Do you want me to have another go, Mr. Speaker?
No, I think lots of MPs are shouting no at this point.
Hang on a minute. Is it this thing here?
I want... quite well. People were decided to be quite rowdy, but I can hear you now. Continue halfway through.
Can you hear me, Mr. Speaker?
It's July.
18 months into a pandemic, and Boris Johnson still can't
the
use
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, can you hear me?
Can hear you loud and clear, Prime Minister.
Do you want me to give that answer again?
Oh, don't worry. Just complete the end bit.
I'm very happy. I will repeat it. I'll say it as many times as you like. I think the Right Honourable Gentleman, the Leader of the Opposition, is guilty of failing to listen to what I said just now. And it's perfectly obvious that, as I said to him in a letter earlier on, that there are some businesses, some parts of our economy that, of course, need exemptions from the the isolation regime, because they need to be able to carry on. And for the most part, obviously, people will have to follow the rules. We're changing it on August the 16th, by which time we will have vaccinated many more people. I understand people's frustrations, but this is one of the few real tools that we have to in our armory against the virus. And I really think that in attacking the isolation system, which is what I think the Right Honourable Gentleman is doing, he is being totally inconsistent with his earlier announcement, which seemed to be that we should stay in lockdown. If I understand the position of the Labour Party now, which is different from last week, they now don't want to go ahead with step four. I think I'm right in that.
I mean, that wasn't worth the wait, was it?
I mean, we laugh, but that there is no worse indictment of the, or no more powerful indictment via that vignette of where the government is at than a fully vaccinated Prime Minister in self-isolation, having been pinged because his health secretary, also fully vaccinated, has COVID, still struggling on mute on Zoom. at the first PMQs 2 days after all legal restrictions have lifted in England. I mean, if you wrote that, you'd probably dismiss the symbolism as a bit on the nose and send it back to the cutting room floor, I think.
It's Freedom Day, everyone. What a way to mark 60 years of the most interesting exchange so far is, can you hear me? And do you want me to repeat that for you? We've had some messages in. Rich says, at the end of this term and having listened to many PMQs, I have to conclude it's Keir's personality and barrister tone that makes him so unappealing. Sad for sure, but true. And then Brian says, I hope you all find someone that loves you the way Times Radio loves Keir Starmer.
That's the first time I've been accused of being too sympathetic to Keir Starmer. Pick up the paper.
I think you need to reboot your DAB radio or something thereby, but thank you for listening anyway. Right, so what are we up to? We're now up to sort of question number four. Who knows what havoc could be wreaked? You wreak havoc.
You wreak havoc,
let's see if we can wreak havoc. This is number four from Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer.
It talks about inconsistency. 2 hours and 38 minutes to do a massive U-turn on Sunday morning. And then what have we seen in the last few days? He says I didn't listen to his answer. I did listen. I still think he's making it up. We had completely unclear announcement on Monday about exemptions. Had contradictory statements all day yesterday. Now we seem to be back to the confused policy of Monday. How on earth are businesses meant to plan when the Prime Minister keeps chopping and changing like this? I have to say, even after 15 months of these exchanges, I can't believe that the Prime Minister doesn't see the irony of him spending Freedom Day locked in isolation and announcing plans for a vaccine ID card. I remember when he used to say he'd eat an ID card if he ever had to produce one, and now he's introducing them. So, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to creating confusion, the Prime Minister is a super spreader. So let me try to get some clarity. Why is it okay to go to a nightclub for the next 6 weeks without proof of a vaccine or a test? And then from September, it will only be okay to get into a nightclub if you've got a vaccine ID card.
Hey, Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I think the Labour leader traditionally has a choice in a national crisis, and that is whether to get behind the government and to offer constructive opposition, or to try endlessly to oppose for the sake of it and to try to score cheap political points. Everybody can see that we have to wait until the end of September, by which time it's only fair to the younger generation, when they will all have been offered two jabs, before we consider something like asking people to be double jabbed before they go into a nightclub. That's blindingly obvious to everybody. It's common sense. And I think most people in this country understand it. Most people in this country want to see the younger generation encouraged to get vaccinations. That is what, with great respect to the Right Honourable Gentleman, he should be doing, rather than trying endlessly to score what I think are vacuous political points.
I mean, part of the job of the opposition is to score
vacuous political points.
I mean, when you're the leader of the opposition, you can't do much else besides.
Boris Johnson does quite a lot of it as Prime Minister, actually.
Very much so. Just so if people aren't totally aware, what is the Labour position, other than criticising and pointing out the mess? What is it? I mean, you wouldn't know from watching PMQs exactly what it is that they want Boris Johnson to do, apart from being less of a confusing mess.
Well, it's a very good question, and it gets to the heart of what has changed about Keir Starmer's approach. I think I've mentioned over the last couple of weeks, the thinking of people around Keir Starmer now is that it is not for us to propose a, beyond having a broad position, i.e. the government was wrong to lift legal restrictions on Monday, it's not for the opposition to say, to come up with a fully coherent health policy. It's a privilege and prerogative of the opposition to be able to kick holes in the government's position. Now, obviously, that does leave you vulnerable, as Keir Starmer has been throughout this year, to allegations from the Prime Minister that all you're interested in is sitting off the fence, and when you get off the fence, you knock me at a time of national crisis, and oughtn't you get behind me? But it's that approach that senior Labour figures have identified as part of the problem for Keir Starmer. And I don't think either of us would say that it's any less effective.
Somebody's tweeted saying, Patrick has definitely got more generous towards Team Starmer since that's lunch the other week. never is one lunch we discussed at such length. There'll be whole books. It'll be like the new
Granita deal. No. I can't be. There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Well, presumably because you paid for it, presumably.
Well, exactly. And also, you know why I'll remember that lunch? Not for anything Team Starmer told me, but it was the first time I ever tried a duck egg.
That might be the most interesting thing of this half an hour of PMQs Unpacked. This is Matt Jolly on Times Radio. Let's go back to the House of Commons and Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister keeps asking me if I will support his chaos. No! And I want to bring the Prime Minister back to one of our earlier exchanges in this House. On the 26th of May, I asked the Prime Minister if he'd ever used the words, COVID is only killing 80-year-olds, or words to that effect. On that day, the Prime Minister pointedly didn't deny using those words. And now we have the proof that he did. We've all now seen the Prime Minister's text message. I quote, the median age for COVID fatalities is 82. That is above life expectancy. And we have the Prime Minister's conclusion in the same text. So get COVID and live longer. Remind the Prime Minister Over 83,000 people aged 80 or over lost their lives to this virus. Everyone leaving behind a grieving family and loved ones. So will the Prime Minister now apologise for using those words?
Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, nothing I can say from this dispatch box or from this virtual dispatch box, I should say, nothing I can do can make up for the loss and the suffering that people have endured throughout this pandemic. And there will, of course, be a public inquiry into what has happened. But I would just remind the Right Honourable Gentleman, when he goes back over the decision-making processes that we had in those very, very difficult and dark times. But these are incredibly tough balancing decisions that you have to take. Again, you have to balance the catastrophe of the disease against the suffering that is caused by lockdowns, the impacts on mental health, the loss of life chances for young people, Mr. Speaker. And what has changed since we were thinking in those ways is, of course, that we have rolled out vaccines faster than any other country in Europe. 96%, Mr. Speaker, of people over 50 now have had a vaccine. 68% of people have had two jabs, Mr. Speaker. What we're trying to say to the country today, and I think the single most important serious message is, if you have not yet had your second jab, please come along and get it. And if you're over 50 and you still haven't had your second jab, or over 40, please come and get it as well. And never forget, Mr. Speaker, that if we'd followed the advice of the Right Honourable Gentleman, we would have stayed in the European Medicines Agency rollout at all.
There we are. It wouldn't be PMQs in 2021 were it not for a mention of the European Medicines
Agency. Reminds me of, remember the bit in Extras, when the whistle blows, the imaginary sitcom, and Ricky Gervais was eventually reduced to, you having a laugh. It's like, it's his catchphrase, isn't it?
It's worth pointing out that Keir Starmer there raising Dominic Cummings.
Yes, without mentioning Dominic Cummings, which is, I think that's why they were so squeamish that PMQs a couple of months ago when the Matt Hancock text dropped 20 minutes before the effing useless text. And the only thing Labour did on that all day was a press release from their shadow public health minister. Now, if anyone can text in and name Labour's shadow public health minister, I will give them a tenner. And that's a promise. I'm a man of my word.
Justin Matters?
Yes, it is.
Yes!
It is.
That's £10 for me. but you're right. But it's interesting that he was happy to cite what came out around the Dominic Cummings interview last night without actually going into any detail about
exactly.
It. Some observations people have sent in. Aaron says, Keir is showing he's improved miles from how he started PMQs last April. More issue of the minute, straight with the questions of what people want asked. But it's of poor quality. It's too pantomime for me. David says, Starmer's developed a kind of chuckling delivery these last two PMQs, which is highly irritating. Referring to the Johnson variant in tweets seems to be part of the same questionable plan to give him some personality. And our colleague Quentin Letts, the Times sketch writer, has also spotted the...
That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget, you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio.
Let's go back.
Here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcast from?
The Prime Minister's answers have no resemblance to the questions I'm actually asking him. He's given us a list of what he can't do. What he can do, quite straightforwardly, virtually or otherwise, is say sorry. The trouble is, Mr. Speaker, nobody believes a word the Prime Minister says anymore. He promised he had a plan for social care, but he's ducked it for 2 years. He promised not to raise tax, now he's planning a jobs tax. He promised he wouldn't cut the army or the aid budget. He's cut both. And, Mr. Speaker, he also promised that Monday would be Freedom Day. He said 18 times from that dispatch box that it'd be irreversible. But the truth is, he's let a new variant into the country. He's let cases soar, and he's left us with the highest death toll in Europe, one of the worst hit economies of any major economy. Last week, 1 million kids were off school, businesses are closing, and millions will spend their summer self-isolating. But don't worry, Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister's got it all under control. Because this morning we read he's got a new three-word slogan. Keep life moving. You couldn't make it up. Mr. Speaker, isn't it clear there's only three words this Prime Minister needs to focus on? Get a grip.
Prime Minister.
Some cheering there from Labour MPs. We go back
Mr.
to Chequers.
Let's look at the position now as it was at the end of last year. And as we come to the end of this parliamentary term, let's be absolutely clear that it is thanks to the vaccine rollout, which, by the way, I never tire of repeating, would have been impossible if we'd followed his advice, that 9 million people have now come off furlough. Unemployment is 2 million lower than predicted. Job vacancies, Mr. Speaker, are 10% higher than they were before the pandemic began. Business insolvencies are lower than before the pandemic began. He wants three-word slogans, Mr. Speaker. I'll give him a three-word slogan. Our three-word slogan is get a jab. And get a jab. And by the way, what we're also doing is help people to get a job. We're turning jabs, jabs, jabs into jobs, jobs, jobs. That's the agenda of this government, by taking sensible, cautious decisions, rolling out the vaccines in the way that we have. We are enabled. We have been able to get this country moving and to keep it moving. And I've listened to him very carefully this morning. I have absolutely no idea what he proposes to do instead, except keep us all in some sort of perpetual lockdown and limbo. He has no answer to the question of if not now, when. He has no plan. He has no ideas, and he has no hope, Mr. Speaker. And whilst we in this government are getting on with getting our country through the pandemic and delivering on the people's priorities.
So there we are.
Quite a powerful peroration, I think, from Boris Johnson there. Obviously, I airily dismissed you when you asked that question earlier. What is Labour's answer to that question? But obviously, when people listen to the Times Radio focus groups, that is the Keir Starmer's big point of vulnerability.
It's sort of weird. The public can hold the two views simultaneously, that Boris Johnson is a mess, is a bit chaotic, but it's a tricky situation he's found himself in, and, you know, I'm glad I'm not him, while also thinking, all Keir Starmer does, this comes along and points out, oh, I don't believe you wanted to do that, which is slightly the nature of opposition, and it's a tricky balance to try. So I'll tell you what, the single thing that stood out for me in that was Keir Starmer at the dispatch box talking about the jobs tax and the idea that increasing national insurance to pay for social care. Labour have obviously already decided against that. Which suggests to me that there's going to be a big battle on it and we might not end up solving social care.
Yes, and that is part of the reason why it's so interesting that the government has delayed the announcement until after recess. Whether that is because of the head of steam building on the Tory backbenches against it, you saw Damien Green among the party grandees to come out against it this morning. One of the government's thinking is, oh, we've got a helpful pretext in that the Prime Minister, the Chancellor and the Health Secretary are all locked up on a strictly advisory basis for the next 10 days and we couldn't possibly announce it in the week before recess. We'll all go home for the summer and everybody will, the anger will dissipate and we'll come back and sort it out. Or the other risk is that MPs take to WhatsApp, they build a coalition against it. The jobs tax thing, Labour will hammer that all summer, I imagine.
Yeah, and we might end up, it may even never be announced.
Yes.
It might be dead before it even arrives. Well, Nigel has been in touch saying, agree with the Dennis Norden style of delivery. He also used to say, you couldn't make this up. So there we are. Roger says, three words for Keir Starmer, do something constructive. And Rich says, uncool middle-aged men trying to be cool is difficult to listen to. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. We bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcast from?
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.